Regrettably, I have to start with denial. I have not been studying the region extensively for a long time. In fact, it's one of the regions of the world that I probably have neglected. But I have been following the events of the past few weeks very closely. So perhaps in that respect, it could be said I've been studying the region closely. During the early 1970s, Gil Scott Heron, a jazz poet from the United States, wrote, "The revolution would not be televised." That soon became a slogan associated with left-leaning movements of the time. He ended his poem by plagiarizing a few well-known commercial jingles, amongst which was, "It will put you in the driver's seat, the revolution will be live." During the past 3 weeks, it would appear, and this week's perhaps much more so, and who knows, in the weeks that will follow, Gil Scott Heron has been proved both right and wrong. The political revolutions we witnessed in Tunisia and Egypt were indeed televised, and they put ordinary people, Gil Scott Heron's virtual audience, in the driver's seat, and the revolutions were live. The extraordinary outpouring of decades of pent-up frustrations and rage against authoritarian governments by the mass of ordinary citizens, led by a generation of young people who take modern information communications technology for granted, brought home to the world the astonishing power placed in the citizens' hands by these technologies and the transformative capacity of what Alvin Toffler once called the third wave. One need not underscore the role played by both social networks such as Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Google, and the television networks, not merely in reporting and communicating to an international audience these events, but also the manner in which these were used as organizing tools to mobilize thousands of cyber-hip young Tunisians and Egyptians onto the street. What one sees unfolding in North Africa, in Yemen, in Bahrain, Libya, Iran, and who knows where else, may be the best communicated, documented, media-ready, and media-driven political upheaval of modern times. Governments could not contain them, let alone repress these movements. Because the development of ICT has outstripped not only the capacity of governments, but has placed in the hands of the common citizen the means to disseminate, communicate, record, and document their own experiences, employing electronic equipment that is affordable and therefore accessible to thousands who have the discretionary funds. Information flowed unimpeded and unmediated between and amongst people who had access to this technology. Any bit of information that could be digitized, from the human voice to the moving image, flooded the airwaves. We had, it seemed, arrived at what Marshall McLuhan had once referred to as the global village, where the size of our planet shrank so that we here in Cape Town could not only witness in real time what was unfolding at the other end of our continent, but could become virtual active participants if we spoke and could read and write Arabic. The information highway came into its own. Not only was its power vindicated, but most importantly, its capacity to empower both individual and collectives was indelibly demonstrated. 4 weeks ago, we here in South Africa experienced the other side of this coin. On the 16th of January, I was awakened by anxious citizens, alarmed by a rumor that Nelson Mandela had passed away. This rumor was being tweeted around the country by unknown persons, either motivated by a macabre sense of humor or just by plain mischief. Though I was certain that information was incorrect, I nonetheless found myself apprehensively phoning members of the Mandela family, colleagues in the ANC leadership, and even the head of the VIP protection unit to reassure myself that the rumor was unfounded. Modern communications technology is evidently a two-sided instrument that can be harnessed for social good, but also for terrible mischief. Citizens of the United States had experience of both these dimensions of what was then the most revolutionary communications tool, radio, when Orson Welles and others broadcast A.G. Wells's War of the Worlds as if it was unfolding in real time. Literally hundreds of people who heard that broadcast believed that the planet Earth was under attack by Martians and took flight from their homes, only to discover that it was merely a radio play being acted by a group of overzealous actors whose creativity got the better of them. A similar scenario almost unfolded in Johannesburg 4 years ago when some mischief makers called in warnings of a terrible tornado heading towards that city to a number of radio stations. Had the Weather Bureau not intervened timelessly, the highways of that province, already clogged with anxious drivers heading home or away from the city, might have been rendered unusable. Those who have seen the movie Hotel Rwanda will also be aware of the genocidal role played by unregulated commercial radio in the terrible events that unfolded there. I think it's important that we bear in mind both these two dimensions of the power of modern ICT when discussing the events in Cairo. ICT itself, like any tool, a knife, a stick, or a gun, is neutral. What makes a difference is the person who wields it. In a polemic against one of the more widely read columnists in one of our dailies, I had occasion last year to write as follows, and I quote myself, "South African youth who have the discretionary funds, like their counterparts in the rest of the world, surf and ride the information highway. Today, any South African who has access to an information communications network can download and read a daily newspaper from as far afield as Umeå in Sweden if he or she wants to. Those who wish to can enter into interactive conversations with virtual friends at the farthest point in Hokkaido, Japan, exchange music, videos, film, and anything else that can be digitized with others in Tahiti, Shanghai, Anchorage, and London." End quote. Can the same thing be said of other young people, especially in the rest of sub-Saharan Africa? The digital gap between the information haves and have-nots is perhaps the most profound in these regions of our continent. What Alvin Toffler referred to as the third wave differs from the previous agrarian and industrial revolutions because of its reliance on the technological informations of the latter half of the 20th century. Telecommunications is the backbone of the digitized information revolution and the key infrastructure for its development and efficacy. Though we have seen impressive improvements, especially with respect to accessibility of the cell phone on the African continent, our continent still lags far behind the rest of the world in this respect. A single statistic demonstrates this. There are more fixed telephone lines on the little island of Manhattan in New York City than on the entire African continent. That gives you an idea of the disparity between Africa and the rest of the world. With the increase in the intelligence of networks and devices, as well as mobile bandwidth, the capacity to communicate seamlessly has grown by leaps and bounds, as the events in North Africa demonstrate. As we have seen, information of every stripe and variety has become available to ordinary citizens thanks to modern information and communications technology. But the capacity of the citizen to access it, employ it, and communicate with it is still highly constrained and uneven. The gap between the information rich and the information poor is quite evident amongst various regions of the world. In our country, that divide has regional, racial, gender, and class dimensions. Non-English-speaking rural communities are the worst affected. Therefore, closing the digital gap requires very intelligent interventions. We have already witnessed the social and political impact of the cell phone in South Africa. I would make so bold as to say that President Jacob Zuma owes his election to the post of ANC president to the availability of the cell phone amongst the youthful constituency that supported him against former President Mbeki. The MDC of Zimbabwe probably thwarted the more nefarious tricks of his political opponents thanks to the same cellular technology that enabled them to collate the results from various polling stations across the country parallel to the official electoral commission that conducted the last general elections. If sub-Saharan Africa is not to be left behind, South Africa should establish itself as the telecommunications port of international traffic to and from the continent. Given the relative sophistication of our existing infrastructure, that could be the platform for the digitization of sub-Saharan Africa. Events in North Africa have shown us that such a development will empower the people of the continent and could catalyze both political and social change of profound significance. Thank you.